You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, let's go. It's the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com and on the 710 Sports app, wherever you are this morning. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. It's a really hard game to talk about, I got to say. I've kind of been going back and forth on how I feel about it since yesterday, because there was a lot to like. There's a lot not to like. There was a lot of reasons for hope and for a path forward after that game, and some other reasons to just say 2-4, four games now behind the Cardinals. How do you start to move forward after yet another late in the game loss? Right? I mean, Geno Smith, you can talk positively about him and say Pete talked about the poise that he showed and some of the real positives with Geno, and all that may be true. He also ended the second straight game with a turnover that ended, I mean, for all intents and purposes, that was it. His final play on the field of each of the last two games was a pick and a fumble. Unfortunately, those cost them both of those two games. So I've gone back and forth. I love what they found at halftime. I love that they found a way to look like a team that Pete Carroll recognizes, right? An actual running football team. And we're going to talk to Pete today at 9:30. In fact, I've already talked to him, so I have secret information because I've already talked to Pete today. We taped it because they got in. I think they get in from the airport at like 4:30 this morning or something like that. That Sunday night game or Monday night, when they play at night on the East Coast, is brutal for them and the travel. So we tape beforehand. Yeah, Pete was mad. He was mad after the first half. Of course he was. How could he not be? Anybody watch that game, watch the first half and go, yep, there we go. That's Seahawks football. No.
It's frustrating.
It was beyond frustrating. And you know, of course, the defense looked bad. The offense looked bad. Defense, actually, I'll give him credit. They hung in there. But the offense, I mean, it looked like, you know, you should have been on the phone to Cam Newton or somebody at halftime. Like, hey, we need some help.
We're 2 minutes in. There's the first Cam reference.
We don't need that from you already.
There'll be more now that Cam is vaxxed. There will be more conversations today. I promise. Plus, I asked Pete about it. I won't give away what he said, but I did ask Pete about Cam. So we'll have some of that coming up later in the show. But at halftime, tell me you weren't thinking about, like, what does Jake Luton look like? What does Russ look like left-handed? I mean, the offense was, I mean, whatever word you want to throw on it that means terrible, use that one. Maybe yours involves, you know, colorful language. Maybe not. I don't know. It's really up to you. But the offense in the first half was abysmal. They come out in the second half, and all of a sudden, it's like a totally different team. They're just running the ball, man.
The handoff goes to Homer. He's got a first down. And then some inside the 20, down to the 15, and finally dragged down from behind by Joe Hayden, the Pro Bowl cornerback. You talk about crossing everybody up. What a play call by Shane Waldron. I'm sitting here looking to see what the coverage is going to be for the throw, and it's a run for a first down.
Yeah, 3rd and 7. Just give the ball to Travis Homer. Let him run. 2nd and 20, or 1st and 20, rather. Hand the ball off and let him run. Give it to Alex Collins over and over again until he's in the end zone.
Here's right back to the line of scrimmage. The handoff to Collins. This time he's down into the goal line. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Touchdown.
Alex Collins, this drive has your name all over it. And the first thing Geno Smith does is goes back and congratulates all the offensive linemen because they just blew people off the ball on that entire drive from 2 yards out. The Seahawks run their way right back into this thing.
What was it, 9 of 10 running plays on that drive? Alex Collins ended up with 70-something yards on it? Like, yeah, that's what Seahawks football is supposed to be. And while I am upset about the result yesterday, I don't know how you can't be, and it may be too late to salvage the season. I don't think it is. And I can kind of talk us through how you can you know, you still got to split these, you know, you got to win these next two games, rather. You got to beat New Orleans at home on a Monday night. You got to beat Jacksonville at home. But if you can get back to even, you can start to see the pathway based on the rest of the schedule of how you could get to 11 wins this year. And if 11 is enough, then fine. So we'll talk through some of those scenarios. The season is not over yet, not by any stretch. But what how do you not come away thinking that Pete Carroll at some point in this game, like at halftime, went in and said, enough. Enough compromising. Russell's not here. I don't need to compromise with anybody at the moment. We're going to do this my way. Not my way and your way at the same time. My way. We're going to do this my way. My way involves handing the ball off to this guy, Alex Collins, 9 out of 10 times. If you don't like it and if you think it's outdated, fine. We're doing it my way. That's what I imagine. I imagine a whole, you know, halftime moment, you know, especially when you think about Pete
and
Carroll's
what Shane
history.
Waldron's like, okay, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm just,
yes.
This isn't my fault.
Shane, run it. Russ is not here in your other ear. We're not going to pull the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. We're doing it my way. Whatever else we've been doing has not worked. We do this my way. Run the ball. Hand it off to him 9 out of 10 times. Motor down the field. Offensive line, go do your job. Go move forward, not backwards.
I'm trying to find the Bob Condotta tweet where he said the first 10 plays were actually called as passes. Did you see this?
The first 10 plays, what? Of
I think
the game?
Of the game, called as passes.
That's insane.
I think that's what it was.
You have, I don't, this is not who Pete Carroll is. I know everybody gets annoyed at me because I talk so much about identity.
I'm sorry, I was wrong. I got that completely backwards before I get dragged. The Seahawks had 10 plays in the second quarter and all 10 were called passes.
In the second quarter?
Yeah.
Okay, well, great.
I know. I mean, I think that leading into halftime, it's like, well, that's not happening
that's
yet.
That's not who you are. It's not who Pete Carroll is. And when you think about Pete's history, right, he gets fired with the Jets, he gets fired with the Patriots, and he felt like he had compromised too many times. Read his book. Read his Win Forever book. And the whole idea behind it is, at that point, he kind of took a break. He stepped back and said, if I'm going to continue to do this, I need to do it in a way that I'm convicted about. And he gets to USC, and he does it his way from then on out. He doesn't compromise. He doesn't try to make nice with everybody else around him. He gets himself in a position where he has enough power to do what it is he wants to do without having to compromise with a GM or, you know, an owner or any of that. He makes himself in charge. And it works. He goes through an epic run at USC. He comes here with all the power he needs. And he has another epic run here in Seattle. It's been tremendous. What Pete's done to coach this team, again, I said last week, I think he and Russ have been holding this thing together with smoke and mirrors. It's true. I don't think their roster is all that good. I think we saw it again yesterday. But his guys play hard. Anybody think Pete's guys didn't play hard for him yesterday? I thought they were out there playing really hard. And at some point, he must have had another kind of moment where he just says, look, we're going to go do it my way. My way is you run the ball. I'm sorry you like cooking. I know all you guys out there love the fancy new cooking offense. Pete doesn't. He don't like it. Pete likes to run. That's what he thinks is great. And oh, by the way, you don't have Russell Wilson. You get Geno Smith. I love Geno. Seems like a really nice guy. He really does. He's easy to root for. And I know Russell was, or I know Pete rather, after the game was, you know, really excited about you know, his poise. And everybody likes him. He seems like a great dude.
I feel a butt coming.
He's not very good. I don't know what else to say. He's just not very good.
You see Trey Flowers' tweet last night?
Yeah, he was really rooting for him. He was rooting for you, Seven. I don't blame him. I think everybody's rooting for him. He honestly seems like a great dude. But he's not very good. And the idea that you would continue to call 10 straight passing plays for a guy who's not very good, for a coach that wants to run, and an offensive line that was built to run, seems like madness to me. It seems like madness.
And this is more what we expected, right? I mean, we were surprised when he looked really good on those drives last week.
I didn't know what to expect, Maury. You and I were talking last week, like, maybe he'll go out and, you know, throw for 300. Who the heck knows? If that was part of the idea, it wasn't going to work. Yeah, everybody loves Geno.
Yeah, I did talk to Geno. I've talked to Geno the whole night and stayed with him the whole time. Just make sure he felt the support and the calm and the poise and all of that. Russ did a nice job with him too, and coaches did a nice job. Geno was clear. He was clear throughout the game and was really there for the opportunities and all that.
He was clear. Everybody loves Geno. He was totally clear.
Reminds me of like a Scientology reference. It's like going clear.
Isn't that a Friday Night Lights thing?
Like, clear hearts can't lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. He was clear. Like, if you pay a little bit more money, you can go up to the next level and find out what clear means. I know poised.
Call Tom Cruise.
But let me tell you what clear. Oh, no, actually, you have to pay for that. Sorry, that's behind a paywall. We'll tell you all about clear. Gino's great. Everybody loves him. He's not very good. Okay, just run the ball. That's what Pete wants to do. And if that's what came out of yesterday, a legitimate reminder of what it is that they do when they do things well, then fine. Then maybe the loss will be worth it if this is who they are moving forward. All right, coming up next, a full game of Geno. Did it make anybody reconsider? We'll talk through that. Plus, we are waiting on some huge potential news to come out of Pullman today. More on that and everything you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
A lot of ways to look at that one yesterday, and certainly I was inspired by how hard they played. It ended up being a great football game. I know they lost, but it was a really good football game eventually. The first half, I felt like Al Michaels is the only one who won. Like, yeah, I took this game off. You guys watch this thing. I'm going to be at home. But he ended up missing what I think was a really good second half, and the Seahawks maybe found something. So it's frustrating, but also hopefully something moving forward. We'll talk more about it throughout the day. We'll get you guys on the horn. Right now, it's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the stark difference between effort and results was certainly on display last night as the Seahawks did make a game of it. They showed all the heart you could ever ask for. In the second half, down two scores, playing without their best player, they dug deep. Give them credit. They ran the football. They found something to give them life and get them back into that game. Unfortunately, though, that reality doesn't go away, and it hit them late as they fell in overtime 23-20. Your final from Pittsburgh. The best news, it looks like they may have found their identity again in a running game that provided their only offense. Alex Collins running for 101 of their 144 yards on the ground before leaving with an injury. And when they ran it well, it opened up some plays in the passing game for Geno Smith as well. But again, reality. For the second straight week, Geno's night ended with a turnover, this time a fumble at the hands of TJ Watt. So yeah, 2-4. Scary moment with both teams gathering on the field after Daryl Taylor went down with a neck injury and had to be immobilized and carted straight to the hospital. Fortunately, Pete said last night the CT scan was clear. He did travel home with the team, so a lot of good news. You'll hear more from that of Pete Carroll at 9:30. Elsewhere, Cardinals still unbeaten. They had a huge day against Baker Mayfield and the Browns, 37-14, and 7 of those 14 came on a Hail Mary at the end of the half. They looked very good against a decent opponent. Rams dominating the Giants, 38-11, 130 yards for Cooper Kupp receiving in the game. Daniel Jones sacked 4 times and threw 3 picks. So, yeah, the Rams look great. Puts the Seahawks miles behind in the division now. They fall to 2-4. Rams are 5-1. Cards 6-0.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, crazy weekend for the local college teams, but likely nothing compared to what's expected today. First, let's get to what happened on the field. Huskies coming back to make it a game at home against UCLA, but gave it up again. They lose 24-17. The final blow coming with just over 8 minutes left and not able to score again. They fall to 2-4 on the year, 1-2 in the conference. 2-4 seems to be a theme today. Cougs seem to be going in the opposite direction, and I stress the word seem. They did beat Stanford 34-31. They get to 4-3 on the year. 89 yards and a pair of scores for Max Borgi, including the game-winning touchdown. 289 yards, 3 scores for Jaden DeLora. So, yeah, some real positives. Stanford had scored 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, which I'm sure had the Cougs fans thinking this was just going to be deja vu all over again, but they come back and get the win. The question, though, will Nick Rolovich come back to coach the team this week? By all accounts, that is unlikely. Today's the state deadline for all public employees to be vaccinated. Rolovich has said he would not do that. He has appealed for a religious exemption, so it's possible that would be accepted, although most believe it will not be. Hoping to find out this morning what the official news is and how that will be released and what will happen next. So stick around throughout the morning. We will give you updates as they become available.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, we did get our first taste of overtime in the NHL this weekend as the Kraken gave up a late lead in Columbus and then lost in OT. Hockey does give out partial credit, unlike for the Seahawks. They get partial credit for the overtime loss. You get 2 points for a win, 1 point just for ending regulation in a tie. That's what's left over from the old days when games actually ended in ties after a five-minute overtime. They also now play three-on-three in overtime, which I think is ridiculous. It does increase scoring. I'm just not a fan. It'd be like if you went to overtime in the NFL and said, okay, 7-on-7, let's go.
Blew my mind to see that happen.
It's awful. I just think I get the idea. They're trying to, you know, provide extra scoring and give teams an incentive to make overtime matter, right? Because five, but they tried 4-on-4. Now they're trying 3-on-3. Just play hockey. Can you imagine if you got to overtime in the NFL and they're like, all right, offensive, defensive linemen, you guys are out. You know that seven, everybody likes 7-on-7. Ball goes up and down the field. Let's go. 7-on-7 football.
Right. Hope you practice this.
It's just
playing
not
a different game than you played the last hour and a half.
It's just a different game. So again, you do get the 1 point, which is similar to the way it used to be when you would end in a tie. But yeah, that's what they do. Don't tell this to Goodell, by the way. If Roger Goodell finds out that 7-on-7 is an option for overtime, they're going to have it in like a year. First, the back-to-back games tonight for the Kraken. They'll be in Philly 4 o'clock this afternoon, then the 85-mile trek up to Newark to take on the New Jersey Devils tomorrow. Quick check of the postseason in baseball. The Braves up 2-0, win last night on a walk-off single from Eddie Rosario. Astros and Red Sox tied one apiece. They are headed to Boston tonight. And congratulations to the Chicago Sky. Candace Parker and crew win their first WNBA championship. There you go. That's three things you need to know. We'll do that every hour, quarter past. I don't know what's going to happen with Nick Rolovich. We're going to be watching that one. But by all accounts, it sounds like he's going to be out. Like, he didn't get the shot, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it sounds like the religious exemption is very specific. I don't know a ton about it. We host a sports show, not a news show, but my understanding and just talking to other folks is I don't think he's going to be the coach of the Cougs by the end of the day.
Well, what I did learn is that the exemptions are approved by a blinded committee, meaning the committee has no idea who the applicant is.
That's interesting. That makes sense. As it should be.
Right, totally. Right? Take any sort of that bias out of
those things. Does this exemption actually, you know, merit our approval, or are we making an exception for the highest paid employee in the state?
Right, I didn't know that.
You can't do that. You can't make an exception for him just because he's so highly paid. You can't just look at it and say, well, but he's the coach of the Cougs, so find a way to make this happen. I can't imagine.
They also said there could be a delay because of the amount of backlogged religious exemptions that have been filed.
Interesting. So we may not actually learn. I think we're going to learn today. I think we're going to find out by the end of the day whether or not he's the coach of that team. I think they're supposed to have a what time is their regular press conference today? I think it's late morning. So we'll find out whether or not he's doing that. I think that will be a pretty good first clue as to whether or not he's the coach. Would you say he's getting fired? I've heard a lot of people say that Inslee is firing him. I don't think he's firing him. They're saying that you can't work unless you do something. Is that the same as being fired? I think the terminology kind of matters. I don't think he's being fired, if that's the case. I think he's choosing not to do something that is now a requirement of work.
Yeah, it depends on who you're talking to, and their affiliations are going to give you that answer. I think that's easy. I don't know if I would use the word fired either. I don't know. It's weird to think about it that way.
I don't think that's fired. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's certainly an interesting situation. And I know that debates are taking place all over Washington this morning. That's for sure. All right. Coming up next, did a full game of Geno make anybody reconsider? We'll see. I doubt it. But we'll find out as we go around the NFL. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, a lot of text here on the Rolovich situation. Coach Rolovich, and whether or not he'll be back with the Cougs. Just a final kind of word on that, and then we'll move on. I see some text saying I'm giddy about it. I'm not giddy about it, but I don't like the phrase fired only because it sounds personal. And I don't think it's personal about him. I mean, I see people, Jay Inslee's going to fire him. Well, Jay Inslee's not firing him. He's essentially saying to everybody and putting everyone in the same category, and there will be a lot of people that are out of jobs today. I understand that because of this rule, which essentially says public employees, so people that work for the state, need to be vaccinated by today. So we'll see what happens with Nick Rolovich. In the meantime, big day in the NFL yesterday, including some big news that I know I care about, and I don't know whether you guys will be happy about it or not. But let's buzz around the NFL. Let's go. I like that. Just be ready right there. We'll start in Arizona. Do we have to? Can we not start in Arizona?
Let's move on.
All right, story number two.
We all saw what happened. Let's move on.
I think we have to, though. This is starting to be a serious situation. The Cardinals are not going away. They're 6-0, and they're not just like barely winning, like dominating good teams.
They're doing it without their coach Chandler Jones and their center because of COVID.
Everybody was out. No Chandler Jones, and yet
pressure coming from Golden. Baker able to break away. Dancing around with flags down, and now he's down. The ball is out, and it's recovered by Arizona.
We're asking legitimate questions about whether their offense or their defense is better. They're both great. You know that debate we've been having here where you're like, hey, all right, open phones, 206-421-3776. Who's more at fault for the Seahawks' struggles, offense or defense? Right? And we have that call.
Do we do that?
Well, we could. We could.
Gather around the old radio, kids.
And up next, we all turn into Casey Kasem.
Right? Sure. Yep. Yeah, that's great.
A long distance dedication. Yeah. They're doing the opposite at our sister station down there at 98.7 The Fan. They're like, okay, if you have to have, like, which team is more likely to make a big play, the offense or the defense? The offense comes up with 37 points, defense forces two fumbles and an interception, gets to the quarterback, and does it all without arguably their best player in Chandler Jones.
Oh, and by the way, Ertz is still on the way.
Oh, no, he was there. He scored a touchdown yesterday.
Yeah,
He's
in.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. That's how much I watched that game.
Yeah, you just plug that guy right in. Let him do his thing. Kyler Murray looks great. 6-0. They're four games ahead of you already in the division. You're only six games into the season. So, yeah, that's becoming a bit of a problem. All right, second story. Did you see what happened in Green Bay? Did you see Aaron Rodgers? I mean, I know by now you've heard it, but Rodgers with, you know, your prototypical Aaron Rodgers in the goal line play, right? Play breaks down, a little pump fake, and all of a sudden all opens up for him, and he runs to the corner, dives into the end zone for what is essentially the game-sealing score, beats Chicago again, and he let him know about it.
Right on cue, Joe.
He had some choice words there for the crowd.
I've owned you my whole life. I still own you. I still own you.
And he said it with a smile. He could not have been more happy about that. He had that quote chambered, ready to go. You know it.
It's 100% true. Like, you can't argue with it.
I know, and it's like, I just saw this text. I usually hate Aaron Rodgers. I liked it exactly the same way.
I don't like Aaron Rodgers.
I don't
humble
like
humble as ever.
On the field, I cannot stand him. And off the field, I'm like, God, you're just so likable.
Really?
I really like him.
I think look, it's hard to start getting mad at quarterbacks for being me guys. That's kind of what they all are.
Yeah.
Right? They're all in the spot. Like, I'm not going to get too mad at Russ for his ridiculous, like, two-minute drill that he ran before the game yesterday and his need to be on.
That?
We'll talk about it. But I'm not going to get mad at him about it.
No, you're right. It's an ego position. Being on the radio is an ego position.
So
obviously, we have to agree with some of that.
So let me just be clear. I just want to make sure I hear you. It's okay for a quarterback to have a big ego.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I don't think I've ever said it
was. Don't give him an opening to talk
Maura,
about Cam. Don't do it.
What do you think? Maura, is it okay for a quarterback to have a big ego? Maura, you know you're walking into the trap here. Are you going to say yes?
After what happened yesterday, I don't think the listeners want to hear this right now.
So?
I think you should spare them.
I don't work for them. Oh, wait, I do. I guess I do. Hold on. Wait a minute. Strike that. Strike that from the record. Quarterbacks do need to be arrogant. Quarterbacks can have big egos. So let's get to the story here of Cam Newton, who certainly is arrogant, who certainly has an ego. And I read all your angry text messages last week saying that you didn't want any part of Cam because he's so egotistical. Right. Cam would never go out before a game and go through every play he might possibly have made if he were healthy, but making sure the cameras were on him the entire time.
I don't think he made sure the cameras were on him the entire time. There's 100 cameras in an NFL stadium. Like, where else can he do this?
Anywhere else where all the cameras aren't? In his hotel room?
Go to the parking garage? It's like, hey, everybody clear this out for us.
I think the point is I've never seen quarterback.
And I don't mind him doing it. I think it's great. But let's not pretend that there's not some ego involved in that. I love that Russ is that dedicated. I love Russ. I have no problem with it.
I mean,
just
we
don't
saw
tell me
former
he doesn't have an ego.
NFL cornerback Darius Butler tweet out, like, all right, I love Mr. Unlimited, but get out of here with that. Come on.
No, you get out of here with the huddle. The fake huddle is the one where I had a problem.
He was doing a full-on huddle.
The huddle was weird, where he's whispering to nobody, but running through the place, I have no issue with any of it outside of the whispering in the huddle.
But let's be clear, quarterbacks have egos. So before you get on your high horse when it comes to Cam Newton, now here's the news. Here's why Cam actually shows up here and around the NFL. Here's what he had to say in his weird home video yesterday.
Two things with that. Number one, hell yeah, I want to still play football. I got the vaccination. You're probably asking yourself, don't nobody want Cam. That's a lie. I've been getting offers. But the realization of it is, it has to be right.
He's got to find the right situation. So maybe Cam doesn't want to come here.
You're probably asking yourself, don't nobody want Cam. That's a lie.
He's like America's funniest home videos all by himself. He takes these home videos. They're a riot. Say what you want about Cam. You can like him, not like him. You can think his arm is shot, whatever the case may be. That dude is entertaining, and for the most part, what I like about Cam is he does everything with that 50,000-watt smile, man.
And his Wingdings font or whatever he uses whenever he posts stuff.
I just love the smile, man. Cam generally does everything he does with a smile. Yeah, I want the Seahawks to make another call to Cam.
253 says Sulk endearing himself to the remaining 8 listeners.
Well, it's 6:30. Nobody listening yet. You guys aren't listening this early. I can say whatever I want before 7 a.m. None of you guys listen. Oh, wait, you're listening now. Sorry. It's pre-7 a.m. These don't count. It only counts if I say it after 7 a.m.
Can you win the show in the first hour?
Nobody even listens to the show
in the first
hour.
Can you win a show in the second hour?
You can start to. You can lose it, though. That's for sure. Trust me. You can lose it.
You're down 14-0 in the first hour.
Yeah, that can happen. No problem. All right, let's see. Did you watch any of the Patriots-Cowboys? Heck of a game in the late window. That was one of the better games of the day. That and the Seahawks game were probably the two best games of the day.
Carolina finishes, that's for sure.
Yeah, Carolina tried to make it close. It went to overtime with Minnesota. But I thought that Patriots-Cowboys game was good. How legit are the Cowboys? You buying that team? That they're like a contending team? I am. I'm willing to buy it. I think they're probably not going to win the Super Bowl. But if you have Dak playing the way he's playing and the defense doing what they're doing, how about the pick six?
Second and 15. Good throw, and it's intercepted. He's got another one, and he's got a field ahead of him. Diggs is going to take it to the end zone. Unbelievable. Just when you think things are going your way, New England's going to stop and do something right. The fumble in week one. The end of the game against Tampa, the tip ball, this field goal, they do it right, the breaks are going your way, and then Diggs, the most interceptions in the NFL, you can't have a tip ball around him.
Is Tony Romo a little excited about Cowboys' success, or is it me? Was he as excited moment later when Belichick torched Trevon Diggs on a little double move?
I did feel weird seeing Dak limp off, though. Is he okay?
I hope so. That's another guy I love. I love Dak.
Right.
It's a calf strain, I think they said after the game.
Okay.
But after last year, okay. I mean, yeah, I'm a Dak fan. I'll admit it. I don't like the Cowboys because, you know.
It's the Cowboys.
Right. Yeah. But I do like, I don't know how you can't like
I don't know many people that don't like him, especially after last year when he went down and he had just spoken out about his brother's suicide and having I think everyone was rooting for him.
Well, and he shares a lot in common with Russ, honestly. I mean, like if there's a quarterback that you think has the most in common with Russ in the league, isn't it Dak? Maybe now it's Kyler Murray just because of the height thing. But I would say Dak is the player I compare most to Russell and how Russell really opened up the doors for guys like Dak Prescott. So I'm a Dak fan. I did think it was interesting. Just vintage Belichick, though, right? You get me on that pick, I'm going to get you on the next play. Like, oh, you want to be aggressive? We're going to run a little double move on you. And it worked.
Well, yeah, and credit to Mac Jones for going back to the same receiver against the same quarterback that just had a pick six on you.
Yeah, it was a really good game. Cowboys end up coming away with the win, and I would say, especially with the terrible division that they're in, that team is for real. I think you got to start taking the Cowboys.
You mentioned it. Can we finally put the height thing to bed after the amount of balls that were swatted down by Geno?
No. If Russell was there, even more would have been swatted down.
Man.
Don't you know?
Man.
Don't you know? It's not about height.
I know. But the amount of times I read it on the text line, the amount of times I heard it at the bar, oh, he's taller, so this is going to be easier. I'm like, what? Who are you?
10 years in, man.
What Super Bowl did you... What?
Russ did look short, though, when he went out there for
the coin
toss. He
looked tiny without pads on, yeah.
What, Jake, looks like their son. Jake Luton, like some sort of freak? How tall is that guy?
And Jake Luton looked a lot bigger than Russ, yeah.
Jeez. And then the camera, he was like a little farther away. I don't know. He looked very small. All right, that is our...
Oh, Jake Luton is 6'6".
All right, good.
He's a big guy.
All right, good. He is freaky tall. Yeah. Good to hear. All right, that's our trip around the NFL. 6'6"? What, it's not?
I'm just kidding.
He's big. Geno's 6'3"?
It's tall to me. It's tall for me.
How tall are you?
I'm Russ's height.
Which is?
5'10".
Okay. I thought you were waiting for you to add like a 5'10 in the quarter.
No,
I was
5'10".
Waiting for you to add something.
There's no quarter.
Okay.
I am just barely getting to 5'10", and my guess is as I get older here, that number's going to... I'm going to get under 10.
It's going to change.
It's going to end up being 5'9".
Okay.
Which is going to be really depressing. Yeah, Brock didn't believe me, and I like forced him to show... I like made him measure me years ago, and he did finally admit it was 5'10". All right, there we go. That's our trip around the NFL. Good stuff. All right, let's talk more about the Seahawks thing. And yeah, I was sort of joking about the offense versus the defense debate that you can have on sports radio. Who's worse, offense or defense? I think the more compelling conversation we've been having has to do with the roster versus the scheme, right? What's been the biggest problem this year? Is it the players and who's on the team? Or is it the scheme that they're running? I'm still not sure I really know the answer to that question. I still think it's the roster, although I'll say the defense sure played a lot better.
It looked different yesterday.
Right? I mean, did they clean up some of those issues, or is Big Ben and that offense just not the type to take advantage? You know, we'll see more when they play the Rams again, right? We'll see more next week, I would think, against the Saints and some teams that can really, with their quarterback and with their offense, pinpoint that weakness the Seahawks seem to have down the middle, right, and take advantage of it. But at least for week one, it does seem like helping with the scheme cleaned up some of the issues they were having defensively. So credit there. I still think the roster has its issues. Geno Smith was sacked 5 times and hit 8 more times. Okay? Quick math on the radio. That's 13 times. Do you know how many times he dropped back in the game off the top of your head?
I mean, like how many?
37.
I was going to say 40.
37 times. So 13 of the 37 times he dropped back to pass, he was hit. 5 times he was sacked, and 8 more times he was hit. That's more than 1 in 3. So if you have a regular, you know, in any given series, if you were to drop back 3 times, he was getting hit at least once and sacked in all likelihood half of those times. That's nuts. Contrast that to the Seahawks. How many times did they touch Big Ben in this game?
Did we even have a sack?
No sacks. One hit.
Pressure.
Well, one hit. Darrell Taylor. That's it.
Man.
They touched him 1 time. And you even heard Collinsworth saying, like, man, this guy's uniform is pristine. 1 quarterback hit in the game. Now, I know some of that is because they get the ball out quick. And, like, that's not the only telling stat. But you're telling me your roster can only get to the quarterback 1 time to even touch him?
And
in the meantime, you're giving it up 13 times?
And I saw Jamal lined up on the line quite a bit early in the game, right?
Throughout the game.
Okay, I thought it was just the first half.
I think he rushed the passer and was up there, I think, throughout the game. So that's an issue. How can you expect to win with that level of disparity in the front lines? When your offensive line is giving up 13 touches to the quarterback and only getting 1 from your defense. Running the football is great, and I'm proud of what they did moving forward. Running is important, but you have to be able to protect also. How can you win football games without touching the other quarterback?
And it's weird that it was this close. And it was this close.
Yeah, I don't know that that's something you're going to be able to survive doing over the course of the year. Look, they nearly stole one yesterday because of a few errant throws from Ben, a great running attack, and really just sort of willing themselves to it in the second half. Some very good tackling on the outside. That Trey Brown hit is one of my favorite plays. Those are the hits Bobby used to make.
Agreed.
Right? What a fantastic hit.
And
on
the moment that you needed it the most.
Yes, and on a receiver who's there like punt return specialist because he's crafty.
Ben stands strong. Pump fakes. Now he's being chased. Now he's going to throw near side. Getting hit. Getting pushed back. Trey Brown, what a play on Ray McLeod. He catches the ball to McLeod. He was about 1.5 yards from picking up the first down. And Trey Brown, like a rocket, comes in. He hits him and knocks him on his wallet. And the Steelers are going to be forced to punt. What a play by the rookie.
I love that. Knocks him on his wallet. It really was, though. He was a revelation yesterday. Scrappy, feisty, fighting for the ball, making plays on the outside, and then that big hit. You need plays. You need your playmakers to make plays. The Seahawks don't have a ton of playmakers, right? They don't have a J.J. Watt or a T.J. Watt or an Aaron Donald or a Chandler Jones. Or you get the idea, right? Remember what Mark Schlereth called those guys? I love this cut. He said this to Bob and Dave, and then he said the exact same thing on the Brock and Salk podcast. They don't have any war daddies on their defensive line who just make plays.
I always think to myself, do you have that one guy? We used to call them war daddies. Do you have a war daddy on your team? A dude that you have to double team every freaking time. Like a guy that you have to say, okay, where is that guy? Where is number whatever? And how are we going to contend with that guy? Because if you don't have that guy, I can run anything I want. I don't have to worry about always having to have double hands, four hands on that one dude, right? And so my thought process is this. When you don't have a war daddy in your front four or your front three or your front, you know, five, however you decide to play defense, you don't have one dude that we say, how are we going to block that guy? Then I don't have any issues. I can go 5 1-on-1s. I can go 5-0 protection. I can get 5 receivers out in the route. I can do whatever I want.
But if you don't have a war daddy, if you don't have a guy that the other team is forced to account for, it's hard to really have success in the NFL. Now, the guys that they do have who they've spent the money on are Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams.
And we're paying them like war daddies.
They're getting paid to be those kinds of playmakers. They're not on the defensive line. But I would hope the offense needs to account for them wherever they are. The problem is they're not making the big plays you need. When Bobby Wagner made a huge play against San Francisco to get in front of a ball on a big third down late, Seahawks won the game. True. Like when their biggest players make those big plays, they win. If Jamal Adams picks that ball off that hit him in the face yesterday in the fourth quarter, you win. You win the game. Simple as that. If he makes that pick, first of all, it's probably gone. It's probably a house call. He is probably in the end zone. You've scored 7 points, game over, good luck. But even if he doesn't, you've prevented them from scoring in that moment. You can run out the clock. There is a good chance you win the game if he has that pick. So what do you need from your biggest players? You need them to make big plays in the biggest moments. Are you getting that? No.
Yeah, for how much we're paying him to be hit in the face and see, and that was one of two, right? Wasn't the second one he could have possibly picked in that game?
Yeah, maybe, but that was the one where it's like that ends the game.
It's over. Yeah,
right. That is one, and he's not even. I mean, it's not like it was just like, oh, it bounced off his hands. It literally hit him in the face. I think it hurt him.
Pete Carroll made a comment post game about it being really loud.
Yes, I think he got. I mean, I don't mean he got like injured, but I think it hurt. Ben Roethlisberger rifled the ball over the middle, and it didn't even bounce off his hands. It's like, you know when you see like a pitch that goes straight and catches the umpire or the catcher or something and doesn't touch anything along the way, and you're like, oh, man, that like rocks the guy backwards? That's kind of what it looked like.
Yeah, it did.
He didn't even get a hand on it. This is the guy you traded for, you're spending all that money on, and what are you getting? I know Pete thought he had a pretty good game and that, yeah, maybe he did. Maybe he did more that we wouldn't be able to tell with the naked eye. He certainly called it out ahead of time. What did he say? He's the best in the nation, he said. You said you're the best in the nation. You know what you got to do if you're the best in the nation? Pick the ball off. Make a play. Show up on the score sheet. Do something specific to help your team win a game. Best in the nation? First of all, I've never heard anybody say that. I know it comes from a meme. Justin, you were showing it to me.
Yeah.
Okay, but he still said best in the nation.
I know, he still quoted it. People who don't know the story is just not going to hear the other side of it. But yeah, it was, if you are the best in the nation, where's the elite play?
It seems pretty simple. Best in the nation is best in the nation. Make the best in the nation kind of play when your team needs it. It's not like, oh, well, okay, he just kind of disappeared for the game. He's right there. The ball hit him in the face mask. It almost knocked him over. I don't know, man.
Stone hands.
Best in the nation. Stone hands?
The nation of stone hands.
It didn't even get to his hands. No. What do you mean stone hands? If you want to be best
They're
in the
heavy.
Nation of stone hands, you have to get your hands to touch the ball to have the ball bounce off of them. This was like stone face.
It's concrete statue.
He's like one of those Easter Island statues. No, I just, you got to make big plays if you're in that spot, and he didn't do it. So I don't know. I when I look at the whole roster versus scheme thing, can you make up for some of the weaknesses you have with scheme? Sure. Can the scheme be better than it was earlier in the year? Yeah, I think so. But at their core, do you think the Seahawks are as talented as the other team are most days? You didn't have a TJ Watt last night. You didn't. Who was the more talented football team last night? I think it was them. I think it was Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's not that talented. Honestly, Pittsburgh is not one of the most talented teams in the league. Elite level talent.
But I wonder how much of that made, to your point, of the amount of pressure they got on Geno. And Geno took some sacks that he probably shouldn't have taken, right? That number could maybe not look
well. Certainly the one on third down late in the game when you were potentially in field goal range to take a sack there, that was four down territory. And he takes a sack? I mean, look, I know that Geno's a nice guy and everybody loves him. And all right, it's as bad as the fumble was to lose the game, how about the sack on third down? Now, and I know you got issues on your offensive line. I know Shell got beat there. I know that, you know who had a rough game was Dwayne Brown.
Yeah.
Dwayne Brown has had a couple of rough games. For a guy that wanted all the money in the offseason, he has certainly not played like somebody who does. I mean, if I'm going to, you know, sort of criticize where you're at roster talent-wise and some of that comes back on your general manager, so far he looks like he was dead on right when it comes to Dwayne Brown and whether or not that was a guy you wanted to pay long-term. But Geno's got to find a way. You got to get rid of the ball. You got to make a change in protection. You got to do something. You can't take a 12-yard sack or whatever it is in that moment. You just can't. So the other team played better.
They did. But
that's where they won. They're better players.
To answer your question, the Mariners do a good job of making other pitchers look like Cy Young winners someday. So did Geno, being a backup, make that team actually look better than they were?
I don't think so. I mean, well, yes, at times. I mean, obviously, he's at fault. I mean, he's the quarterback. But T.J. Watt's T.J. Watt,
yeah,
right?
That's true, yeah.
Right? Cam Hayward is Cam Hayward. That guy's been a star forever. And they play premier defensive playmaking positions. Guy on the inside, guy on the outside. That's who wins you the game. Who won the game for
them? Who won the game
for
them,
guys like him. T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward. You got Al Woods, Brian Monet, and whoever's on the outside today. It's not the same. And you're paying Jamal Adams, you're paying Bobby Wagner, and they're not making that level of play. It's not like they played bad. I don't think Bobby had a bad game. It's not his fault they lost. But where's the huge Bobby Wagner play for the money? If you're going to pay him all that money, where's the big play? Where's the moment where he diagnoses the tight end handoff that they had for a touchdown, pops up and hits that guy? Where's that moment? Where's that great play that with extra effort and extra smarts? He's making the plays. Where are the extra plays?
And you're right. This is a different conversation if Jamal makes that one catch.
Oh, they win the game.
That's it.
They come in here, they win the game, and we're having a huge conversation about how they found a way to get it done.
And the defense did it.
And instead it bounces off his face. So, all right, coming up next here, for the first time in years, it is of all the negative you can take out of yesterday's game, and there is some, there is one thing that is so incredibly positive, I had to ask Pete about it. We taped early this morning, and when I play you Pete's answer, I know we'll play the whole interview at 9:30, as usual, but I specifically asked for this one clip because nothing could be more telling about how Pete thinks and where this team is going, where the season is going next. Don't go anywhere. I'll play it for you next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.